You're listening to In Other News on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage, bringing you news, views, and music from the youth perspective, things we care about straight from our mouths. In Other News is a production of Alaska Teen Media Institute. I'm Quinn White.
And I'm Cornelius Nelson. On our show today, we have a couple of cool interviews that Atomy producers have conducted with local filmmakers and school teachers. We also have some music, news, and a little bit of events, and more. So, Quinn, you're back. What you been up to?
You know, I've just been kind of hanging out, spending a lot of time with my friends, staying out of trouble mostly, getting in a little trouble, and working around here. So, I'm glad to be home, but I'm also excited to go back to school.
What adventures have you gone on aside from, are you still Vermont royalty or?
Oh my God, I am, of course, still Vermont royalty, but you know what? Right now, I'm on my, like, New York royalty.
New York royalty. Part of the tour.
But, you know, we'll see where the future takes us. Might not be New York royalty anymore. We'll have to see.
Because it's winter time, and so, like, you know how, like, during winter, you just kind of, like, turn into, like, dissociative. You're familiar with dissociation,
yes.
Right? Okay, good.
Very
you seem
familiar.
Like you would be familiar.
Thank you.
Where you just kind of, like, tune out as a way of combating seasonal depression. Well, I don't like self-diagnosing. That's just what we're going to generalize this into, because that's how everyone gets around winter. We're just like,
winter be like that.
It be like that. And that's the only words you can really use
What's
for
crazy
it.
Is, like, I got back home, and, like, within, like, a week, like, I just was feeling kind of crazy. And I couldn't really describe into words how I was feeling. And I was telling one of my friends about it, and she was like, Quinn, you know, like, you know, that's just how we get, like the seasonal depression. It's awful.
You've been away too long.
I forgot.
You became all big city.
How'd I forget?
Dude, it goes, whenever I leave for a trip or something, I forget about it, and I get back to Alaska, I'm like, oh, yeah.
I just need to sit in the sun for, like, 24 hours straight.
Oh, it'll go away as soon as you leave, like you.
I hope so. I need to get the hell out of here.
Or you'll just have a really cool flex card. So my ways of combating it have been making rope. It's one of my cool hobbies. I have this, like, little spin dial that I just pull across, pull through, pull down,
and just
makes ropes, you know? It's a good way to pass the time, you know. I do laundry, I do that, you know, so I'm not looking at my phone all the time.
I need to do laundry.
Yeah, I actually need to do laundry immediately after this.
Mm.
What ways have you been combating winter?
Well, you know what? I've just, like I said, I've just been spending a lot of time with my friends. But, you know, sometimes spending time with your friends means, like, watching hours and hours of TV on the couch, and then you go outside and it's dark again. But I've just been trying to surround myself with people that I love. I've been working here at me a lot, just trying to, you know, kind of hone in on really, like, focusing on my passions this year. You know, new year, new me, and I gotta keep my eyes on the prize. What about you, Cornelius? What's your New Year's resolution?
Oh, dude, I don't do the whole New Year's resolutions thing, but I guess if I were
so
to,
no New Year, new you?
I guess, like, make more rocks into knives. That's another thing
That's
you do in my
fun.
Spare time. I do flint napping to make rocks into knives. I'm working on this, like, cherry quartz knife. I don't know. It's a good time. It's a good way to pass the time, and I get to stare at shiny rocks.
I love a good shiny rock.
Yeah, right?
Who doesn't?
It's like I get to stare at shiny rocks and turn it into a skill.
All right, so we're going to get into our first story today. This is Cornelius' story, so I'll let you go ahead and introduce
it. It is my story. So coming up next is Sound Over Silence. This is a cool little edit that we made of it. We originally aired at the At Me Live on Stage radio show. That was a good time. Hit a man can hand the stage. Someone found it, luckily. Otherwise, it would have been real weird talking to the library the next day. Anywho, here it is. It's September 5th. I'm at an event called Sound Over Silence. And let me tell you, it's quite the spectacle. Tucked away on 6th Ave at the heart of the city church, there's a lineup of local musicians. Emma Hill. Jaybird Parkhurst. Cannon Fire Orange. Leave me here to ask by the flowers. I'll be here medium build.
Looking at my phone nearly gave me a panic attack. I think I need to teach myself boundaries.
And oral imago.
I'm waiting on the comfort of competitions.
But it is more than just some show, says organizer and performer Emma Hill.
Well, it's not just a concert. It's really an opportunity for us to talk about mental wellness and what that looks like in our community and the fact that it needs to be talked about more. And we're working really hard to break down the stigma surrounding mental illness and incorporating it into our community. So this show is a show, but it's also surrounding those ideas as well.
A series benefiting mental education. Sound Over Silence is put on by NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And for Emma Hill, this is a passion project that she wanted to see come to fruition.
This event has been something that I've been working on with a few different people to make happen for a while now. I'm a very strong believer in talking more about mental wellness within our community. And so when I reached out to Jason at NAMI and realized there was an opportunity for us to partner up and make a series that could benefit mental health education in our community, I wanted to do everything I could. So I put together this show and I got all these artists to be willing to donate their time because they're amazing.
Emma actually gave me a call out of the blue kind of right after Dunleavy was elected. And
that's Jaybird Parkhurst of the band Termination Dust.
You know, there are two fires in Alaska and there's news everywhere that was bad, and she was in tears and was like, I want to give back, I want to do something, and I have no idea what to do. So we brainstormed for a little bit and like she got to the point of feeling a little bit more confident and, you know, gave Jason a call and she just wanted to contribute something to like our society and our community here. And I told her I was on board no matter when or where it was.
This event holds personal ties for many of the performers, including Nick Carpenter of the band Medium Build.
Well, an event to raise money and awareness for mental illness and mental health and talk about suicide and depression. It's incredibly attractive to me because I struggle with mental illness, anxiety, and depression myself. And people don't like to talk about it because it's hard to talk about. So I'm very excited about having this event.
Putting Sound Over Sounds together was a community effort, as organizers called up people they knew would want to be involved. Addison Rowland and Zach Morgan of the band Cannonfire Orange are also part of Satellite Heart Records, which co-hosted the event.
We know Nick and the people who ran it. Also, we all support like mental health awareness and education.
Yeah, we feel it's really important. You know, we're just here to help out, spread awareness.
This event not only sparks interest in the performers, but also in the community.
I read up about it, sounded like it was going for a good cause, so I wanted to attend.
It was amazing, really heartfelt, good to see so many people come out for this good cause.
I came out because mental illness is something that affects our community a lot, and on a personal level, I deal with depression and anxiety regularly, and I really appreciate our community being willing to have these conversations and to be vulnerable, and I appreciate our community for that.
The impact of this event isn't lost on the organizers, including the executive director of NAMI Anchorage, Jason Lassar.
The fact that so many people have come out both to support this and really everybody that's involved, from the folks at the space, the sound booth, the performers, have all donated their time and their talents to this because of how strongly they feel about the mission.
The event is more than just music. The stage was given to another organization that aims to destigmatize mental illness.
Well, I think it's honestly just really great. The ability of this event to be much more open with a lot of mental health issues, and I think a lot of these events have a lot of power because it breaks down stigma, if nothing else, just like in this room.
That's Burt Croft, one of the founders of the youth-led coalition mental health advocacy through storytelling, commonly known as MHATs. Their approach to mental health awareness is more direct. Their members voice their own experiences with mental health struggles. Two of their members got on stage to share their stories.
Because mental health is so often talked about in music, especially local artists, I think it's a great idea to bring it all together with the intention of talking about and raising money for mental health treatment.
The music, the storytelling, all of it brought the room together.
Definitely feels like everyone's pretty intimate. No one's standing off very much. It's really cool. I like it. Definitely like a community-led event.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like people get just be open here, and it's really important to be that and have a community here. So, yeah, that's awesome.
This event not only shed light, but brought new voices to the community.
That we're going to hopefully put on more SOS shows, Sound Over Silence, and I just hope that it continues to grow. It's going to continue to help us create educational opportunities within the community around mental health.
I just think we just continue having events, destigmatizing, talking about mental illness at a young age. Like, we're all struggling. Can we just talk about it? Just talk about it. I love it.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
For Alaska Teen Media Institute, I'm Cornelius Nelson. All right, so that was Sound Over Silence. That was the piece I did. Shout out to everyone that let me harass them at that event.
That was awesome.
That was a really good time. I'm really surprised they just let me go in there.
They really just let you in that. You should get in there.
Just really went in there. So Mallory Thoma is interested in becoming a film editor. So she sat down with some local filmmakers to talk about editing and the work they've done in film throughout their lives. Here it is. Story of their lives.
I'm Quentin Oliver Smith. I'm a filmmaker and I'm self-employed at Lansick Media.
So what inspired the name Lansick?
I think it might have had something to do with a Modest Mouse lyric at some point, but I came up with it when I was about 16 or 17 years old. The idea behind it was, you know, you're like seasick, but on the land, like if you were like always on the sea. I'm not a sailor at all. so I don't have any like personal cred for being landsick at all, but I thought if you make up your own words, it's a little easier to get found online.
So how did you get to where you are today running your own media company?
I had been making films under the name Landsick Films for probably about 5 or 6 years. There was a situation that arose that made me want to leave a job pretty expediently. And as I did that, I thought I was going to get another job somewhere else. I interviewed, and it sounded like they're going to hire me. It took the CEO a while to get back to me. And within like the 3 weeks I was waiting, didn't hear a word about this job. I had two people come up to me and ask me to shoot videos for them. And I thought, you know, well, heck, why not? Why shouldn't I just take a chance here and see if I can't just do that full time? It was really slow starting off, but things have kind of started to click as of late. And at this point, it's been really nice because ever since the tax incentive left, a lot of video professionals left the state, and it kind of it opened up some opportunities for me to get on jobs I wouldn't have normally gotten on. In positions I wouldn't have been chosen for over somebody else.
So as an owner of your own company, are you ever frustrated by the administrative responsibilities of running it? Or do you feel they impede your creation of media at all?
They absolutely impede. they are very distracted a lot of times. It is kind of nice. Sometimes I enjoy it because I feel like an actual business person when I'm like figuring out how to pay my credit card bills. But I have been enjoying it. There's a lot of the administration side of things that I'm still really clueless about and I'm excited to get better with. But it is kind of tough to have two brains about something in the same day almost where you're doing all this math and figuring, you know, fun stuff out like taxes. And then, here's a video to edit. It just kind of throws you a little bit.
Do you feel you make a fair or a just amount of money for the work that you do?
A lot of times, absolutely. For the amount of work that I really feel like I have to put into something, a lot of times, of course. A lot of times it's a very undervalued skill, and I will do a lot of extra work to put it like my personal quality of, you know, they might have only budgeted for like 3 hours of editing between, you know, us and everybody that knows how to edit anything video wise. It's probably going to take longer than that, even just exporting, uploading, you know, making a revision. So a lot of times, sometimes people don't appreciate the amount of work you might put into something for the price. But a vast majority of times at this point, yeah, I feel pretty satisfied with the arrangement.
Do you have a college degree, and what is it in?
Yeah, I've got a Bachelor of Journalism from Ole Miss University of Mississippi, and with a minor in cinema.
Do you feel that it's relevant to the work that you're doing today, or do you think you could have gotten into the work without getting the degree?
I would say both, if possible. It's definitely relevant. Journalism helped me kind of branch out and get comfortable talking to strangers and, you know, also some the research side of things for that. Like, I learned a lot about making documentaries and how to approach a story from my journalism degree. I don't necessarily feel like I've learned anything through film school that couldn't have been learned just working on set. And, you know, I worked on a feature film right after I graduated high school, and I learned a lot in just 3 months on, you know, on a job like that. That film school, they're really good for theoretical knowledge and, you know, getting you comfortable working with gear that's way too expensive. But, you know, I feel like more so your connections and your ability to work on set with people, it's important to actually live that.
So do you feel that having a college degree, do you feel that a different type of education, like internships, might be more useful?
Absolutely. And, I mean, I think on-the-job training is the most important kind of training you can get. And really what I find beneficial about, you know, internships and mentorships are the fact that you get the connection of the person you know who is working in the industry and knows what the realities of it are like, instead of maybe having a teacher that has been, you know, out of the industry for 20 years, still a wealth of knowledge, but maybe not have the most relevant practical knowledge on how to find work and what the real world's going to be like.
If you're like turning a video into someone that contracted you to make the video, do you ever feel discouraged by criticism that you receive on it or things that you are asked to change?
There is a lot of muttering to myself, I'll be honest. And times I try to keep it as professional as possible. In the day, I always remind myself, it's what they want. You know, that's the number one most important thing. That's why they're paying you to do this for them, because they know what they want and they just need some help with it. So it can be frustrating at times, because, you know, sometimes you're gonna have just like a little bit different aesthetic taste of than somebody else will, and it can be kind of frustrating at moments. But ultimately, end of the day, you know, it is what it is.
Okay, that's all the questions I had.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Of course, thank you.
So that was wonderful, Mallory. Thank you so much.
Shout to Mallory.
Classic Mallory. She's always coming through, always doing the most.
All right, so coming up next is Devin's interview with his former media teacher at West High School, Tim Davis. Devin, an inspiring filmmaker, wanted to talk with Davis about his experience as a filmmaker and a teacher. And here it goes.
So, bit of a broad question, but how long have you been involved with film or part of the film community?
Yeah, you know, I started filming because of snowboarding. That was a big part of my life. When I was, I was probably 15, I got a snowboard. It was the first time I'd ever tried it, and it was pretty fun. Maybe I was a little younger, maybe 14. And so the next summer after that, I saved up and got a snowboard. And then the next summer after that, I realized, hey, you know, this is kind of fun. Snowboard movies are fun. So I saved up and got a Fred Meyer, went to Fred Meyer and got a Sony 8mm handy cam, high eight. Mm-hmm. Let's get that right. And so I started making snowboard movies with my friends, basically home movies, for lack of a better term. And then that kind of parlayed into working with on some side projects with different businesses in the city, some different local business people, largely in the snowboard community, but did some stuff for a guy who made x-rays and did some wedding film and stuff like that. And it pretty much paid my way largely through college, just doing that job. And and then as much as I loved it, it was cool. I realized I was going to college to go be a teacher. And wouldn't you know it, I was able to kind of mix the two by teaching the broadcasting side of the house in our media program over at West.
So as a teacher, teaching film and media, what's your favorite project that you've worked on or that you've introduced?
Oh, man. There's a lot. You know, I think that's kind of tricky because I've seen some really, really solid projects. You know, when you were a student of mine, you put out some really, really good work. We have a few students, kid Levi and a kid Jericho, that are putting out amazing work right now as well. And so to see those upper level students succeed is really cool. But I think it's watching those students the first time they put together an edit and it feels like a real movie, like, and watch their eyes light up. And the first time they drop a J cut on a conversation and they're like, whoa, that's like the movies or whatever it is. I think the first time somebody sees that, they suddenly open their eyes to a whole new world of art and creativity that they really never knew maybe they had in them. And that's a really special moment. It's really rewarding. And I think that's just anytime that happens is definitely my favorite thing to do in class.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, definitely, definitely. So of the filmmaking process, filming, editing, all that stuff, what's your favorite part?
Favorite part. It's the process. It has to be the process. You start with a blank timeline and it's terrifying. Like that blank timeline, it's supposed to become something and there's no real way to start it. And I like to think it's organic. I capture things. I import things. I'll just throw them on the timeline and I'll start looking at clips altogether. I think music's a huge part of it. I've used a few sources between Free Music Archive. I've paid for sources like Artlist, and I'm using like Music Bed right now. They're all good. And I think it's listening to hours of 15-second clips of music to find that one that you catalog and go, oh, that's going to be really good for this episode. That's going to be really good for this life event. Mixing that together. And then seeing it all come together is really satisfying. But I just love the process of maybe this will look better if I take off one frame. Maybe get this whole shot out altogether. Maybe cross dissolve this or that. I think there is something magical to it. And it's not in the filmmaking world, yeah, it's common. But like in life, not a lot of people get an opportunity to kind of play with time the way you get to with Premiere.
Yeah, totally. When did you realize you wanted to become a teacher?
Early. I like learning, and I don't know. I'm still probably pretty immature. Probably still. I like learning, and I loved college. It was an awesome experience for me. And I think sometimes people forget that the experience of upper level education is. It's a lot. It can be a lot of fun, and I had a lot of fun. I was doing a lot of stuff on the side as well with these projects. I was doing the media stuff while putting myself through school to become a history teacher of all things. I love telling stories. I think stories are what I got into it for, just to talk shop and learn what it means to be human. But early on, I knew I was going to be a teacher. I think maybe my senior year in high school, even I knew that that was something I was interested in. And I'd coached snowboarding, I'd taught snowboarding, I'd coached football, I'd coached baseball. I just did a lot of working with people, and I really enjoy seeing other people take lessons and go run with them. It's really rewarding when your students outshine like anything you ever could have done. Like that's really cool in whatever field you're in, whether it's in history or media or whatever. When they run way beyond anything you did. That's, tell you what, that's a really, really good feeling. And so I figured that, I guess I figured that out pretty early on and just knew exactly what I wanted to do.
What pushed you to start teaching media more than just becoming just a creator of it?
Yeah, I think it was kind of that whole connection between a lot. It was just themes in life. So, you know, call it motivation, call it the man upstairs, whatever you want to call it. I think it's like there's just these themes that kept reoccurring in my life that I couldn't ignore. I liked teaching. I liked filming craziness and I liked putting stuff together for my friends. I liked making edits. In the snowboard and skate world, that's like that's kind of a cool deal. It almost hacks the system a little bit. You're a filmer, and then you now have this new set of skills, this different set of skills. And I thought that was really fascinating, you know, because I fell a lot. Mm-hmm. So I can film and people are like, that's cool. And so it for lack of a better, it gets you the ticket to the dance, you know, to some degree. You start filming stuff and people want you around and you start to edit and you meet a lot of new people and go a lot of cool places. And that theme of filming stuff, and then that theme combined with I really enjoyed teaching stuff. And then this class got offered. I was offered to teach it, and I could kind of create it how I wanted it. That was really cool. And I'm really thankful for those opportunities to do that. And so I think that's when that big time transition of like, man, I can't wait to teach this now and show other kids how to do this. I could go out to Turning and Pass and go film with my friends, and we could have 4 hours of footage. That 4 hours needs to become a 2 to 3 minute micro part. And I think that's life, right? You have a lot of things you want to do and a lot of things you can include, but at the end of the day, you have to pick and choose. And that skill of picking and choosing, I think that's where school comes in. I think that's a big part of it, to educate, young people on how to pick and choose and use their time wisely.
Cool. We could keep sitting in this room for hours just talking, but I think that's it.
Cool.
I think
awesome.
We're good. Yeah.
Right on, man. Well, I'm proud of you. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Go film something. Go make something.
I remember Mr. Davis from high school.
Really?
He seemed like a pretty cool guy. I never took one of his classes.
Did you ever like interact with him at like a pep rally or something?
I remember, you know, I've only ever interacted with him like a few times, but you know how like some people like you always accidentally embarrass yourself in front of?
Yeah.
He was that person for me. But the thing is I was in high school, so everything I said was dumb.
Oh, well, it's high school. High school doesn't count.
You know, I definitely like just came off as like one of those like weird kids in high school. Maybe I just was.
Yeah, I think you're just a weird kid. That's I had to come to terms with this recently,
yeah.
So I just had to come to terms. Yeah, I was the weirdo.
I recently had to like come to terms with the fact that I was unpopular in high school. And I just looked in the mirror and I was like, it's okay. We're cool now.
You know,
right?
You're cool in college.
That's
even
that
better.
Matters. That's all that matters.
That's worth way more.
Because you know what? Like at school, like I'm just like that girl from Alaska, and they're like, oh, little quirky,
yeah.
Quig, she's so fun.
That's the best part about going out of state is you can get who asks you, hey, who are you? Like, oh, I'm Chris. I'm from Alaska.
Literally.
And boom, instant win.
I'm the only kid from my college to ever go, I'm the only person from my college from Alaska to ever go there. I go to college in Mount St. Vincent in the Bronx, go Finns, Finn Pride, you know, what up? But
Wazoo.
Yeah, it's a crazy place. It's a crazy place, but
all right. So
yeah,
yeah, that's good stuff. So, what's up with the story about being home from college that you made, Quinn?
Yeah. So I went ahead and I made a radio piece about what it's kind of like to go somewhere really far away from college, like away from home for college, and then come back home, and kind of like what that's like for yourself personally, but also like the effect that has in the community. Cause you know, kids from Alaska, they go all across the world and you know, they bring their experiences back with them to this community. So what I did is, you know, I talked about some personal experience and I also interviewed two of my good friends about their experiences at school as well. So I'm excited to share that with you guys.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to listen to it. Here it is.
In 2018, my friends and I graduated high school and got ready to go off to college. We all went our separate ways. I went to New York City, and my best friend Charlotte Smith went to Greece. A few of my friends scattered around the U.S., but still, some of my friends chose to stay here in Anchorage.
I think it was like a big learning experience, you know? Like, you go all the way across the world and like you think that you're like, yeah, I'm ready, but like we all just graduated from high school. Like the world is so different out there, just the way that people, like the way that their community is and the way that they interact with each other and like social norms and everything is just incredibly different. So it was like relearning a whole new set of rules for like the way to interact with other people.
That was Charlotte, the one who went to Greece. Like I said before, I went to New York. Having to adapt to the culture shock of New York, specifically the Bronx, I feel like I've changed a lot since I've been at college. In my experience, the way people treat each other in New York is a lot different from the way people treat each other in Alaska. I've had to become a lot more resilient and learn how to roll with the punches. But as much as I've changed, Anchorage still feels like home.
I think that going away to college, you change a lot personally and you learn all these new things. And because you feel so drastically different when you come back, I think you almost expect home to feel different. And then it doesn't. Like it's still home and it's still, you know, like where you feel most comfortable. And it's those things that you've learned from going away to college only help you more when you come home instead of making it feel different or alien.
When people go out of state, they talk about how it feels like a major change, they gain independence. It's a little bit hard just because I haven't done that. I'm staying in state, I'm still living at home.
That was my friend Willem Meehan. He studies aviation at the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Because I'm staying in Anchorage, I wanted to do something that would get me out of the state for a little, just to sort of prove to myself that I could be independent. And that's exactly what happened.
Over the summer, Willem got the opportunity to live away from home, studying abroad in Amsterdam.
Living over there for a month, it kind of like proved myself that I was independent, that I was able to be my own person, and I'm not just shaped by who I've been around for the past 20 years. It was a bit of a confidence boost, more or less.
Willem had a blast in Amsterdam. Even though staying in Anchorage wasn't his first choice, living here after high school has kind of changed his outlook.
It definitely feels like there's opportunity here as far as career paths go. Before, I thought there was just the only way to make anything of myself was to move up, move out. And although that's still my ultimate plan, it's just started to get pushed down the road a little bit farther.
Willem will be living in Alaska for a while, but Charlotte is getting ready to leave again. After Charlotte spent a semester in Greece, she came back to Alaska and spent a year at UAA. Now Charlotte is getting ready to transfer to Alfred University in upstate New York to study ceramics. She's going to rely on the skills she picked up while she was in Greece to make this transition a little easier.
Being that far away and being that independent, I think has made it so much easier for me now to like be comfortable with leaving again. I'm like, I've already done this before. Like it's scary, but like I got it.
Moving across the country is no easy feat, but I know Charlotte's gonna kill it at Alfred. Plus, I can't wait to be living in the same state. I'm getting ready to head back to New York here in a couple weeks, but I've definitely had a wonderful time back home with my friends and family. The other day, I was driving around with my friends, and I decided to ask them about how they think I've changed since I've gone off to college. Here's what they said.
You have this view of yourself as a pop star in the big city, like you're the star of the world.
You've become more dramatic.
You've become extremely dramatic. Everything's bright lights and big city and, like, things.
have more value than ever.
I think you got a lot more dramatic. More dramatic and confident, I guess.
Me? Well, I can't say I disagree. Sometimes life at college feels like it's straight out of a movie. At first, I was kind of shocked about what my friend said. I'm not gonna lie, I was hurt for a second. There's nothing wrong with being dramatic at all. There are times where I do feel like a pop star in the big city. But that's just who I am. And that's showbiz, baby. For the Alaska Teen Media Institute, I'm Quinn White.
Jamming, kicking right to your ear.
Straight vibes.
Vibes.
Hope you got synesthesia so you can see them sound waves.
You don't like this playful banter?
All damn. Right, so coming up next, we got Mallory and her interview with the local film editors. Yeah, you go tell them, Mallory.
Go off, Mallory.
Yes.
I am Charlie Sears. I am part of Alaska Filmmaker, and I'm currently the treasurer, former president.
So there are certainly higher paying jobs, but do you feel you make a fair amount of money for the work that you do in film editing?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's you know, it's always a struggle, but you know, trying to find out how much, you know, you're worth, but it's yeah, for sure.
All right. So switching on to a little bit of a different topic, do you happen to have a college degree? And if you do, what is it in?
I don't have a college degree.
Do you have a different type of job education that you'd like to explain?
You know, I went to college and, you know, I have friends that went to college and graduated. I have friends like myself that went to college and then didn't go back after a semester. And we're all capable of doing the jobs that we do. And so it's just depending on where you want to take your life kind of thing. And for me, job experience was the way to go. And I had an opportunity to work on Big Miracle when it was up here in 2009. And I learned more in that 2.5 months working on that feature film than I did in the 4 months I did in college. So that experience alone was more beneficial to me. May not have been beneficial to somebody else who wants to go to school, but yeah.
So you mentioned you worked on the set of Big Miracle, and you also just mentioned that you learn a lot by being on sets. Would you say that that's what you worked on that started getting you to the point that you're at today?
Yeah. Without that movie, I wouldn't be here today. Yeah. Without that movie. Because I met a lot of great people on that set. Deborah Schultz and Bob Crockett, who were big people at that, or they're still big in the state, but they were a big component of making the tax incentive happen. And so they were on that set and I met them, and they kind of took me under their wing and developed me as a filmmaker and as a professional on set. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be here today without that project.
So you mentioned the tax incentive. Would you mind explaining what that is a little bit?
Yeah. So every state, not every state, but a majority of states have a film tax incentive that incentivizes films to come to their state to film, and it's usually in the form of tax credits. And Alaska had one of the most aggressive, with up to 56%, with a baseline of 30%. So if you spent $100,000, you could get back $30,000 in tax credits. So when a producer is trying to make a movie, they're trying to see, how can I get money back the quickest? So if you have a big aggressive tax incentive, well, they're going to look at your state more often. That's where Michigan, Georgia, Louisiana, all those big states that the film industry kind of blew up in, they had really aggressive ones as well. And so once people saw that, we started getting a lot of productions coming up. And then in 2013, I believe it got repealed. 2013, 2014, it was repealed because we went into a recession. So, tax, you know, the tax incentive did a lot of good for this state, though, especially because a lot of productions came off in the off season, the winter time. So we were able to fill hotel rooms and things like that in the off season, which was pretty important.
All right. So switching gears again, is it hard emotionally or mentally to be criticized or told to change things that go with your vision compared to what you were contracted to do?
Yeah. It can be. When I was younger, I fought really hard for the things that I did in an edit. You grow up. When you grow up and you get more experience with the process, you kind of let go. You kind of realize you have to let go of some things and not be married to them. And it's still hard because you might fight really hard for something. But it is hard to let go of a creative vision that you may have. And sometimes, you know, if you have a client that understands that you're passionate about something, they see it, they'll let it go or try to compromise with you. But it is tough.
So I've also been informed that you were credited in 4 films. I was wondering which was your favorite to work on and why?
4. What 4 were they? Big Miracle. It was my very first it's my very first movie I worked on, and I'll say that's the best. It was the best experience. Even seasoned people who worked in the industry for 30 years said it was the best movie they had ever worked on. So I would say that was probably the best experience. The one where I learned the most about how the industry works as a whole, because on that film, it was very much like we were in our own little box from the rest of the film industry. The one that I learned like really how everything worked was Frozen Ground, which was the Nick Cage, John Cusack movie that came up here.
So how old were you when you worked on the set of Big Miracle?
19.
19.
Yeah.
Would you say that that's a rather young age, or is that?
Yeah. I mean, it was right outside of, you know, I went to school when I was 18, got back, worked at Best Buy, and then, yeah, I would say I'd say it's young. I was the youngest person. I was the youngest person on set for 4 years before, like, Quentin Smith got onto the scene. So,
all right. That's all the questions that I have for today, unless you have anything you'd like to add.
No, that's it.
All right. Thank you for joining me.
All right. Cool.
All right. Thank you so much, Mallory. And
next come up is Daisy Carter's interview with her former audio video teacher from King Tech High School. I can't believe it's an official high school now.
That's crazy, huh?
I really wish it was when I was in school so I didn't have to go to Bartlett. And I actually think Bartlett's bad because, like, King Tech had stuff I actually liked. But, nothing you can do about it. But you know what you can do?
Nothing we could do now.
You can listen to Daisy Carter's interview with her audio and video teacher from King Tech High School and local filmmaker, Jeremy Blake.
How long have you been a part of the film community?
Well, unofficially, I've been a part of it for about 10 years. Officially, I would say I've been working since 2012. So this will be my 8th year.
What is your background in film?
My background in film. Well, so currently what I do is I am a camera operator and location sound technician. So I worked primarily shooting TV shows, commercials, all that kind of stuff. Or on larger projects, what I would do is I was a camera support. I'd be like a first assistant camera or second assistant of camera. And we're just like mechanics that build the camera, take care of it. But I'm primarily known for being a location sound technician. So I go out to shoots with a whole array of microphones and recording devices and wireless transmitters. And it's my job to make sure that everything sounds clean and good, and that I give the editors a variety of different options.
What are your favorite projects that you've worked on?
My favorite projects that I've worked on, they would have to be feature films. I've had the opportunity to work on 3 different feature films, and those are my favorite. I like doing creative films, stuff that has like a narrative, that we get to spend a little extra time kind of, you know, playing around with how characters act, the lighting, set design. I do a lot of that for short films. Sometimes they're a concept, sometimes they're paid work, but feature films were always my favorite because you get to spend so much time on them, and you get a group of people together and they're all working towards this common goal, and, you know, we're all fighting to make this vision happen. And you develop this, what I affectionately call a trauma bond with everybody, because you've been in the foxholes with each other, and you've had those early mornings and you've had those late days, and you know, we all kind of have these memories together, and you know, these are people that you remember for the rest of your life. And I wish I had more opportunities to work on more feature films, because you know, you really get to meet like some of the best people in the world.
Could you possibly like mention like what feature films you're talking about?
Oh yeah. So like the three feature films that I've worked on, one was called Proper Binge. It was one of my first projects that I ever worked on. I started out as an actor on that, and I had a lot of fun with it, but I quickly became interested in all the stuff that was happening behind the camera instead of front of the camera. Two other feature films that I've worked on was Moose the Movie and Sudsy Slim Rides Again. A gentleman named Chad Carpenter, you've probably seen his comics. And yeah, those are the three big ones that I got to work on.
Do you have any passion projects that you are currently working on?
I do. I have a project that I'm working on with a group of friends called Matt and Megan. And we have three episodes that we've made of it. And we've put them out on Amazon Prime and YouTube. And I think we have a couple of them on Facebook. Currently, we have another episode that we've just finished. We're in the middle of production for a fifth episode. I'm actually going to be working on that this weekend. It's kind of fun. I'm directing an episode. And then there was an episode before where I was the director of photography on. So yeah, it was a good opportunity to try different roles. Definitely finding out that I enjoy running the camera and the sound equipment a lot more than I do directing. But you know, it's a lot of fun.
What is your favorite aspect of filmmaking?
My favorite aspect of filmmaking is the community, the sense of community that you get out of it. You get a group of people who come from all different walks of life and have all these very specific talents, and they wind up working so hard together trying to bring something to life, whether it be a reality TV show or a commercial or a feature film. And it's just wonderful watching all these different things come together and to make something that it doesn't exist. And that's the thing to remember, is like all films are kind of, you take nothing, you take all these things that are laying around and you build something that, you know, becomes a product, an item. You know, it's kind of cool. It's like, I don't know, it always reminds me of alchemy, taking something and turning it into something else. You know, you take people, you take equipment in a static environment, it's doing nothing, and you make a movie. You know, you get to make art, or you get to tell a story. You know, it's kind of fun to think about that when you think of like larger films, like you know, like a movie like Jurassic Park or Blade Runner. And it's like, these were all just ideas that people had, and at some point everything came together to make it happen. And it's really exciting. I don't know what it is, but just being on set working with people, just, you get this kind of buzz where it's like, oh my gosh, we're making something and I have no idea what it is. So it's really, that's probably my favorite aspect.
How did you become from being a filmmaker to being a teacher?
What had happened, I was freelancing and working jobs, you know, just kind of hopping from gig to gig. I just wrapped out on Sudsy Slim Rides Again, and I was working for Royal Caribbean Cruises. We were traveling all over Alaska and filming these highlighted featured people. I was working with a director named Jake Rosenthal, who has made a bunch of skateboard videos, was very popular. And one morning I woke up and I had 9 phone calls, 8 of them from people that I had worked with, and one of them from the current principal of KCC, which was King's Career Center at the time. And they were all asking me the same thing. They said, hey, there's a teaching job that's available for their film and audio program. Do you want it? And I was like, I was kind of blown away. I was like, holy cow. And I had known 2 instructors that were teaching that program before me, April Frame and Mackenzie Banbury. And I remember when April Frame was getting ready to move on and wanted to get somebody else in there, she approached me about it. And I was like, you know, I didn't feel like that was the spot I needed to be. I didn't feel like I had enough experience, or I just didn't feel right at the time. I felt like I had a lot more to do that I wanted to do in my career. And then Mackenzie Banbury took over, and he got a much better job offer working for a drone development company. And so all this stuff kind of came at the last minute. I was in the middle of this Royal Caribbean shoot, and I had all these phone calls, and these people were asking about this and that. And I don't know, I thought about it and just like how short the notice was, And I thought, you know what? I should at least try because I don't know if anybody else would want to go for this. And I had worked with a lot of people that had come out of the, used to be called radio and television, before April rebranded it into the film audio and video program. And I'd worked with a lot of people and they had nothing but the nicest things to say about that school and the program and all the different projects that they got to work on and the experiences that they had to offer. And I felt that it would have been a real shame if somebody who hadn't actually been out in the field, who hadn't been from the industry, wasn't able to get in there and provide that stuff. So when I went in there, I interviewed for the job, and I wasn't even sure I was going to take it. I just was going to interview for it and kind of feel it out. Just the response that I got out of the committee that was interviewing me, I got to see the facility, and I kind of just, it just kind of felt like I should give it a try. And so I kind of told myself, you know, I'll give it a year. And, you know, if I don't absolutely hate this, you know, I might try, you know, I'll try another year. You know, I might try a couple years and see what happens. And I'm starting my third year now, and I'm kind of digging it. I really am. And that's where I'm at.
All right. That was awesome. Jeremy Blake seems like a cool guy. He was in here just a little bit ago, and he was just talking about Star Wars.
He was?
Yeah, just talking about it.
Yes, I'm all for it. I don't like the new Star Wars movie, but hey, I'm all for it.
You know, I've never really been into Star Wars.
You know, fair enough. Star Wars, as a person that likes Star Wars, I don't like Star Wars.
It's just, you know, maybe I'm not evolved enough to understand. I don't know. I'm not super into movies.
Why would you say something so controversial yet so brave?
So brave. Now it's time for At Me Raw.
At Me Raw. Oh, yeah. 2020. Things are making comebacks. The bubonic plague. World wars.
At Me Raw.
At Me Raw.
Where we talk
Quinn
about
White.
Anything.
What are your fun college adventures? You
oh,
always have
my
fun
gosh.
Stories.
I'm not sure if I can explain those.
have you seen anyone jump from a balcony yet?
I can't get into that. You know, I don't know. This semester has been kind of weird for me. A lot of things have changed. You know, just like a lot of things that make me sad have happened. But I've also just had like kind of a good time. Like, I was telling the story the other day. Whenever I tell this story, people are like, "Well, Quinn, this seems like a little like seems like you were trying to like hustle some people."
You're like, exactly.
I wasn't, I swear. But me and Kay were like, what are we going to do for our get-rich-quick scheme, right? And we were like, we are going to read people's cards in Washington Square Park. Like, we're going to do tarot readings. And
okay.
Washington Square Park is like one of those big famous parks in New York that
yeah,
like, you see on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And me and Kay, we steal chairs from our college. I really hope no one from my college is listening. We steal chairs.
Let it be noted that Quinn may or may not have acquired chairs from college.
And we borrowed them. We took them back, I promise. They were there. Like, we put them back at the end of the day. We got this folding table, and we drive down to the park, and we set up, and we make this little sign that's like, tarot readings, $5. And, like, we practiced the night before. Like, me and Kay had practiced the night before. Like, we were set. And we sit down, and this man immediately comes up to us and is like, you guys are doing tarot readings. And me and Kay look at each other like, wow, this business idea was such a good idea.
We're like, ooh, this is real now, okay.
Like, we made it. And I start to, like, get nervous. It was a really cold day out. I don't know why we still decided to go, but we went. And this man pulls a $5 bill out of his sock. I swear on my life this happened. He pulls a $5 bill out of his sock. He, like, slaps it down on the table. And Kay is like, great. And I start reading his cards. And I kind of run out of things to say. And, like, there's a pause in the conversation. And as there's a pause in the conversation, I realize that he is wearing, like, a speaker. And the speaker is just saying, transcend, transcend, transcend. And in that moment, I look at Kay, and we both, like, kind of look at each other with, like, the same fear in our eyes.
You went to hustle, and in turn found a cultist.
Yes. And then Kay starts talking to him, and then he just starts ranting. And he's like, you know, I'm not saying I'm the Messiah, but the Messiah never says he's the Messiah. And the radio is just like, transcend, transcend, transcend. And then this woman comes over, and she was like, can I watch your guys' reading? And I was like, no, I'm sorry.
Oh, we got a phone call. Yeah, answer on air. Yeah.
You think I should answer
the
it?
Phone call, sure.
Okay. Hi, Charlotte. You are live on air.
Hi, world.
All right, what's up?
Me and Willem just left his house.
Okay, I'll see you in a few.
we have an errand to run.
Okay, you have anything you want to say to the world?
No.
Okay, bye.
Take money, bye.
All right. As I was saying, I'm sorry, my friends.
Yeah, transcend.
So we were transcending.
Okay.
Charlotte clearly has not transcended. And, like, I just look at Kay, and then this woman comes over, and she's like, can I watch your reading? And Kay is like, oh, my God. And just, like, it's just, like, now at this point just talking. And this man is just like, all we need is love. Like, you know what? You just got to transcend. All you need is to transcend. And me and Kay look at each other. This man talked to us for maybe 30 minutes. And then he walks away. Me and Kay look at each other and we go, we got to go. We pack up our stuff. We go back to the college.
You go home $5 richer.
We made $5.
Five sock dollars.
We went to a Wawa and we got hoagies.
It's enough for a piece tea for like an Arizona.
The toll to get over the bridge cost more than we made that day. But you know what? It was an experience. And I'm in college, so it doesn't matter, does it? What about you, Cornelius? Anything crazy happened to you recently?
I learned how to properly use a noodle strainer. Mm. You put it inside the pan and you flip it over.
Oh.
Yeah, I hate it too. Mm. But it's more convenient, so I do it anyway.
I understand.
You don't lose many noodles.
I'm glad to see we're just evolving.
Yeah, tonight I'm going to make spaghetti muffins.
What's a spaghetti muffin?
So you know it's like shepherd's pie muffins?
I'm familiar.
Put pasta in like your sauce and your meat in there. You put a meatball in there so it pops just above the top.
All right.
Spaghetti muffins.
I'm not going to front. That sounds terrible.
It's spaghetti in a handheld. You don't need a plate.
I think you have transcended like
dude, you
the
know
realm
how
me- of being like... being like a man, and you have become God.
I don't even need to use more plates. I just put all my muffins on
and
one plate.
And it's in. It's a muffin.
Yeah, boom. I don't need dirty any silverware.
No.
Genius.
You might not even have to wash your hands afterward.
And nah, dude, you always wash your hands before and after you eat. That's just common manners. Look,
all right, I'm sorry. I transcended too much.
Do you not wash your hands, Quinn?
I always wash my hands.
I don't
I'm
believe
I'm a very
you.
Clean lady.
I don't believe you now that you've said that.
I swear.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I eat, this is just, what are we doing here?
All right, that being said, spaghetti muffins, at me raw, walk on people's back. I think the real lesson here is
friendship.
Get a mattress as soon as you can. Don't just hang out sitting on the floor with no furniture. That's not cool, man. Quinn, what advice do you have for the people?
I would say my advice to the people is just, you know, vibe. Be good to, like, people around you.
Invest 4.2% of every income that you acquire.
Yep. And be nice to your mom.
So that's going to do it for our show today. Thanks for all of our contributing producers, Mallory Thoma, Mallory Toma, Toma, Devin Schreckengost, and Daisy Carter.
Thanks again for listening to In Other News here on KNBA 90.3 FM. In Other News is a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute. If you'd like to learn more about what we do or listen to past episodes of our radio show, please visit our website at www.alaskateenmedia.org. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you again for listening. I'm Quinn White.
I'm Cornelius Nelson. And
this has been
Alaska Teen
Media
Institute.
Yay! Be nice to your mom.
So you can put her in a home later in life.
Bye, Mom.